Good morning. Morning. Okay, yesterday we did Pasuk Yudalid. We pretty much finished all the Mefarshim, but what I do want to do is just go back to a Chidah, and maybe we'll also do Rabbeinu Bachya. Let's just first take a look at the Chidah. First start with the Chidah, back on page 417, a very important Chidah. Back on page 417, it really goes back to a Pasuk Yudalid, but it goes, he writes all the way through Pasuk Yudalid. So again, it's on page 417. The Chidah writes, "Vayomer Elov Manas Aloch Seuni VaHatiluni VaYachtru HaAnoshim." They said to him, "What should we do? Now that you have confessed that you are the source, you are the cause of this storm, you are the reason why we are in danger, and indeed we may all die. What do you recommend we do?" And he said, "Lift me up and throw me into the Yam." Lift me up. The people, the Pasuk says, they did not want to do that. They did not want to listen. And instead, Vayachtu Hanashim, they began to attempt to steer the boat back to dry land. So the Chidah writes, Efshel Lefarish, B'masha Amru B'Yushalmi, Perches, Tumas, Sia Shel Goyim, this is what someone here you mentioned yesterday, when you mentioned yesterday, Sia Shel Goyim, Sheyichadu La'odam Echa Sheyit, Sheyitnuhu, I think it was Sperling, you mentioned this yesterday, Sheyitnuhu Lahorgoy. What happens if a siach, a group, caravan, a collection, a band of goyim, Sheyichadu, they designate, they specify, we want this person. Give us Reuven. They besiege a city or a caravan, and they say, you have with you a certain person, we want him. Give us a person, Sheyichadu. We're going to kill you all. So what does it say in the Yushalmi? Mutar l'moisroi. You're allowed to give over the individual. So the question there in the Gemara is, what happens if the person that they demand is an innocent man? Okay, we have a group of people. They come to a city and they say to the people, we want so-and-so. And the people in the city, they say, why? What did he do? So they say, we just don't like, did nothing. He did nothing. We just don't like him. We just, you know, he's a, whatever it is, whatever political reason, they don't like him. We don't approve of his policies. He's a candidate for president of the United States, and he's a threat. He's a popular person. We want to eliminate him from the running. And he's not chayiv misa. Are the people allowed to give him over? Because if they don't give him over, they're all going to die. So if the person is a criminal and it's been proven that he's chayiv misa, he has committed a crime, and he's chayiv misa, so then, of course, then that's where we apply the halacha and the Gemara, the one Yushalmi, you can give him over. The person has not committed a crime, he's chayiv misa. La halacha.
But not the dinei, you know.
Okay, so let's be very vague. Let's just talk in abstractions. And if Shach, the person is we understand why he's chayiv misa. He's a murid b'malchus. He's done a horrible crime. Okay, so there's what to work with.
Yes.
Okay, you'll say, but you need witnesses, hasra, there are technical details.
Yeah, who's dinim?
Dine goyim, dine yisrael. Okay, it's a good question. I don't know the answer. Let's put that aside for the moment. Let's just talk in general that the person is understood in society, that such a person is chayiv misa. So then, of course, that's where the Gemara applies, that the person can be given over. But let us say the person is not chayiv misa, he has done nothing wrong. And these people, they're the mafia, they want him. And if we don't give him over, they'll kill everyone. So there, the Yerushalmi, there is a debate there, what is the halach? On the one hand, if we don't give him over, we're all going to die. So anyway, this fellow's going to die. But therefore, why should everyone have to suffer on the account of one person? This fellow, his name was Ula Bar Kushof. That was his name. Tivate Malchusa. The government demanded that he be given over to be killed. And they gave him over. Umsoroi Rabbi Yeshua Belevi. And Yeshua Belevi gave him over. He gave the instructions, give him. And he was delivered to the government, and the government executed him. And from that day onward, Eliyo Hanavi did not appear to Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, which was an indication that he had done something wrong. He made a mistake. It was not correct that you should give over a person in this situation because of Rav Meir Zal. Why was he upset? L'chayra there, the situation was such where Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, he was justified. The fellow was indeed Chayiv Misa. So there was no reason why he should not be allowed to give him over. And the Meiris explained, Shehikbid al Shemiher lemosrei miyad. The sin was, he did not negotiate. Okay, that was the sin. Just because they could have, at the end of the day, he would be given over anyway. It appears there's some benefit in delaying. Maybe it's a lesson for the goyim in the future that it's not going to be so easy. Maybe you'll suggest it's chayin sho'o. Maybe you'll suggest that maybe by delaying, maybe indeed something will happen. There'll be siyata d'shmaya, and the person will not be given over to die. Okay, I don't know all of the exact details, but the Gemara is just telling us a principle that what it would appear is the person was chayiv misa, and according to halacha, Rabbi Shubin Levi Paskin, that indeed he could be given over to the government to be killed, and that's correct, because if we do not do so, everyone will die. But there was still a complaint against Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in the way the situation was handled. It should have been handled in a more delicate way. It sends the wrong message to the people, to the world, how to deal with such situations. That itself is a very powerful lesson, that just because you're right, you still have to do it, you have to be politically correct in the way you execute what is correct. It matters. The way your language, your conduct, the way you appear to the public does make a difference. Now, v'chosav harav marein harav Rebbe Shmuel Yofezal. Okay, we turn over here, we turn to page 419. What does he write? Zagam, Rebbe Yishu B'levi Paisel Ula. Even though Rebbe Yishu B'levi Paisel Ula, was he told Ula, this fellow, Ula, you're going to die. We're giving you. And Ula, he understood that it was necessary. Loi nispayes ela al yidei pitui. He was only appeased through persuasion. So what is he saying over here? He's saying that I'm not really sure what he means over here by this. The gam Yeshua Levi paise ula loi nispayes ela al yidei pitui. He was not appeased. El al yidei pitui. I really don't know what he means by that. He means there was something. It seems like he's giving another answer. It seems like he's. It seems like there was some other
some form of
persuasion which was not. I don't know. I really don't know what it means. Okay, let's not clear what it means yet.
So he disagreed. Is that what it means?
Yeah.
He says, "I don't want to die."
Yeah. Right. Okay. So therefore what?
As opposed to Yonah, who's willing to go.
Oh. So that's what he's saying over here now. Vahashta nafalagol al Yonah. Let's see, he's maybe following through. Vahashta in this situation. Nafal now here. So here the question is, what's going on over here? Is Yonah chayiv misa? Hashem here, there's a storm, and now the ship is about to sink, and Yonah says, give me up. Yonah over here is, Yonah is a volunteer. And we said this yesterday. Yes. When you are a volunteer, that changes the equation. The goyrol, the chida writes, is equivalent to Hashem designating Yonah, singling him out. No one's coming to challenge that point. They want to know, well, what is the halacha? It seems like the people on the ship over here, they were talmid chachom. We first go from them being idolaters, to balei tshuva, then they become Rashi Yeshiva, and now in the Chidah they become Talmidei Chachamim. Okay? Every single day, these individuals, they're going higher and higher and higher. They know the Yerushalmi. Who knows Yerushalmi? Anyone here learns Yerushalmi? Dafyomi Yerushalmi? They know Yerushalmi, the Machlokes. They're coming to ask Mashayla, Yechayiv Misa. They know all the sugyas. So they ask Yechayiv Misa. What does he say? So they wanted to know that they wrote to Lord Asim Chayiv Misa. So look at that. Yonah says, yes, I'm chayiv misa. You can check off all of the criteria. I am chayiv misa, and therefore, according to halacha, you have to give me over. However, what's the next question? Will Eliyahu HaNavi appear to you? Mikanu lahaba. You see, now not only are they telling me the chachamim, they're ready mamish from the tzaddiki elyoin that are zeicha to Eliyahu HaNavi. And now the question is, if we do this, are we going to be like Yeshua ben Levi, who did what was correct, but Eliyahu HaNavi was upset? Eliyahu HaNavi said, I'm not going to go meet with such a fellow who is involved in such activity, even though according to the letter of the law, it was correct, but it was still not handled in a way that was befitting the stature of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So now the question is, these people, they now know clearly all of the criteria have been fulfilled. We, our lives are at threat. Hashem is demanding a single individual. He has been specified through the Goro. The individual is Chayev Misa. And guess what? He's even volunteering to give himself up. He's better than the story with Ula Bar Kuba, because there he needed Pitui, right? You just said it. There he needed to be persuaded. Here he's more than willing to give himself up. But still in all, we know the story. I mean, the story didn't happen for 1,000 years at least. We know the story that will happen, that Eliyahu HaNavi still felt it's not proper. Umikol makom yesh lochush ktsas, the hasam shri l'moyshu l'agoyim, there it was permitted to give him over to goyim. Avol hocha l'hatila, there it's indirect, here they're throwing him layam, hovi kihorgoy biodayim, a new factor. Now this gets back into Shiv ben Bichri. Shiv ben Bichri, there they killed him and they threw their head over the wall. Who is going there? The story of Ula, of Rabbi Shua ben Levi, the Jews or the people in the city did not execute Ula bar Kuba. They did not kill him. They just handed him over, even though they knew good and well that the person would ultimately be killed. But they are not the ones who did the killing. Their hands are not full of blood. Here, by listening to Yonah, they are actually executing him. They are killing him biyodayim. So it's not exactly the same thing as the story of Yeshua ben Levi. Maybe this to go this far, to directly be involved in his death, maybe that is not permitted. So here, biyodayim, aval bat beloy pitui, but here we have the advantage that b'loy pitui, who me atzme amar, we do not need to persuade him. He's willing to volunteer to be killed. He said to the worm the words, sa'uni fahati luni, lift me up and throw me overboard. The oid choshashu shloy lamar ho'inin, and also they were concerned, they were not doing this immediately, they were delaying. They learned the Gemara that in Shubha Levi, the Eliyahu HaNavi did not appear because he was too swift. He should have delayed for whatever the reason was. Ulechen hayu menasin, they were testing the waters. Lahaschil lahashlichai, like this, the Medrash, we'll see later on, the Tanhuma, v'noch hayom, and they lowered him into the water, and then the waters began to subside, and they picked him up, and then the storm resumed, and they kept on testing like a yo-yo. They kept on testing if it's really true. Shema linoi say holich v'sar k'mosh amir azal. V'noi safar, what else do they do? V'yachtu l'hashivas as alei bosh lo yicholu. They had tried v'yosu kol tatzdikei. That's a great word. Every trick in the book. Okay? Tatzdikei means every, what's a good word for tatzdikei? I said trick. They're better words than trick. Every strategy. Every angle, every strategy, they made an attempt called Tatsdike, Vaikoro Kol Elu Dinim, Vaikoro. I'm not sure what that word means. Kol Elu Hadinim Lemoisha Biad Goyim, Avalhacha. Originally, in the original story, it was to give him over the hands of the Goyim, Avalhacha, Gezeres Hashemi. Over here, it's even more severe. It's a gezeres Hashem. In other words, saying that this case, they felt they were less guilty, because in those situations, who's the one that wants this person to die? It's a human being. A human being, who says they're correct? Who says that their laws are just? But here it's the Ribbono Shel Olam, certainly Tzadik V'Yosher, who, Avazel Shamarka, that's now the beauty of the Chaim HaSanach, is the only one that addresses this. The only one of all the commentators that we've saw so far that addresses the ambiguity, the mysterious conclusion of the Pasuk, Kaasher Chofatzta Asisa is the Chida. We discussed the repetition of Al No Noivda B'Nefesh Ish. We've discussed the expression Titein Aleinu V'Yal Titein Aleinu Domnaki, but no one really gave us more an explanation of the word Kaasher Chofatzta Asisa. And here, the first one to do that is the Chida. And he's telling us this is to be understood in a halachic context. Because what they're doing over here appears to be challenging in the world of halacha. If a government or anyone, a bandit, demands a person, are you allowed to give him, to surrender him, to give him over in order to save your own lives? There are so many conditions. Here, the pasuk concludes they were justified in doing this is because here it's not human beings who are demanding that a person be delivered into their hand. It is kasher chofatzta, that it's Hashem. And Hashem is in a different league, and that changes the equation entirely. Mm-hmm. So as you see, you get a flavor. This is a very fascinating thing, is that it's always very common. We have a shiloh. You have a new modern-day question, or you have any question for that matter. So what is the halach? So you have to extrapolate. There is no case that has ever existed like this. The conditions today, the conditions in almost in every she'ela you come and ask a rav, are unique. Because if they were not unique, you wouldn't bother coming. It would be clear-cut. Yeah?
Yeah, but hindsight, we see that they wanted to... They throw him into the horse. At this point, we don't know that. So they had the choice. Maybe, this guy is guilty because of him. We are having trouble. They didn't make a decision. Let's kill him. Let's get rid of kill him.
They did make a decision. They could have get rid of him.
But
they're going to live with guilt their entire lives.
But not by killing him.
The Chidah seems to say that it does. The Chidah seems to say that drowning by letting him into the water is close enough to directly taking his life. Of course, you'll say there are indirect ways to kill a person. Just don't feed him. Let him starve to death,
yeah.
Or put him in an environment. Go put him in the jungle. Just drop him off on a desert island. He'll die eventually. Okay, but when you release a person into the ocean, into the ocean, that's equivalent of death. You're actually killing him, and that's what he seems to be saying. That's an outright murder or execution. So when you come and ask a shaila, every shaila you ask, and we all know, is unique. Because if it wasn't unique, if it was so simple, so clear-cut, you wouldn't come and ask the question. So why you ask the question? Because the circumstances in your Sheila are different than what is written in Shulchan Aruch. Here as well, you have a very complicated sugya. A person is in a city, and the city is under siege, and the enemy or your opponent demands a specific person. Are you permitted to deliver him in the hands of your enemy in order to save your own life? So this is discussed. This was a story of Shimi Yoav, the man that he wanted, Shimi ben Bichri. Is that what his name? Shimi ben Bichri. And there, what was the story? There was an Isha. What?
Shevach.
Shevach. Shevach. Shevach. With an ayin. Sheva ben Bichri. There was a woman, an Isha Chachama, and she was clever enough to say, who do you want? And the whole, you have to read the entire story. What did they do at the end? They executed him. And they threw his head over the wall. And that was the end. So there, that's a very interesting story where they actually cut his head off. They actually executed him. There's no greater execution than that. And that was permitted. But there, in that instance, the person was Chayev Misa. The person was a rebel. He was Murd B'Malchus. He was specified. So there you have a precedent for such a halacha. We have another story, another source, the source of this story of Ula and Yehoshua ben Levi. That story is not as good, because in that story, it was there. They didn't want to actually. They are not the ones who actually took his life. They delivered him in the hands of the goyim, and it would be the goyim who would take his life. But you have to also understand, maybe that case was even better, because there, when you give over your person to an enemy, the enemy may torture him. And who says? Let me ask you a question. Who says? If you know that the enemy says, we want a person because we want to torture him, we're not going to kill him instantly. It's going to be a very long, gruesome death. And if you don't do this, we'll kill you all. What would the halacha be in that situation? I have no idea. Can you really equate all of these examples? These examples where a person is chayiv misa. So when Bezin executes a person, there's a halacha called V'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha. Biror lo misa yofe. Put the person to death as swiftly as possible. Okay? So there are rules. But when the goyim are telling you, we're going to take this fellow and we're going to torture him like you've never seen. So there's no V'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha just because the person has committed a crime. And he's chayiv misa, it doesn't mean you're allowed to torture him. So if you know good and well that the goyim are going to torture him, are you allowed to give over a person to their enemy to save yourself? Here in the story of Yeshua ben Levi, they gave him to goyim. You don't know what the goyim are going to do with this person. He may have information that they need. They may torture him. So how then was Yeshua ben Levi allowed to give him over? Well, obviously, Yeshua ben Levi understood the situation, yet faith in humanity that they wouldn't torture him. Or maybe they would torture him. There are more factors. But in every single situation, you get an appreciation here. The conditions are different. Is the person chayiv misa, yes or no? And as you've all mentioned, well, there are dinei Torah to be chayiv misa, and then there are dinei de malchusa. And even when they're dinei de malchusa, who says they're following protocol, they're following the proper procedure? Maybe it's just a bilbul, maybe it's a lie. And when they're dinei Torah, you have to have edim, hasra. What are the guidelines? Every situation is so unique. And here, what kind of thing over here? A goyrul. A goyrul means yechayev misa. Can you use in a court of law a principle called a goyrul? That's enough for you to deliver the person over? It's a tremendous chiddush. But here you have an advantage that the person is volunteering. So let me ask you again, if he's volunteering, so why doesn't he throw himself into the water? Yeah. If Yon is such a tzaddik, he's going to volunteer. So like they always say about people who claim, I once heard, I don't know if it's true or not, I don't think it's true, but people walk around the whole day saying, I'm going to commit suicide. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to call the police. You don't have to worry about it. If they really want to commit suicide, they would have done it already. People are
generally that's the thought, but the
not always, not always, not always. No. Right, that's be very careful. That's what I said. I just said. But generally, person walks the whole day and says, I'm going to kill myself. You've been saying this for a very long time. Why haven't you done it by now? Okay? People have to worry about are the people who don't say it. The people who are quiet and have symptoms. And you see they exhibit symptoms where they get us nervous. Those are the people who are priority one. The people who pronounce this every single day, you have to deal with it. No one's coming, like you say, you have to be very careful, but they're not priority one relative to people who exhibit symptoms and are silent. If Yonah is such a good volunteer, who's stopping you from jumping off the boat? Who's stopping you? What are you telling us to do it to you?
Doesn't want to commit suicide.
But if that is what is required, why is Yonah trying to wipe his hands on someone else? If you want to do it, so do it. Do it. What's going on over here? So obviously Yonah is not so willing to do it. He's telling them to do it. So they're really doing it. So are you a volunteer or are you not a volunteer? We learned before when it came to the mice of Yeshua ben Levi, so we said in the story that Leonov didn't come to him, and he mentioned over here mentioned this thing, he needed pitui. The fellow didn't want to do it. He didn't want to give his life up to save everyone else. We needed to persuade him. And over here, Yonah, I'm willing to do so. Yeah, you're really willing to do so? So do it. So go. Well, what are you making trouble for us? something is going on over here. There's too many variables. And this case is just a very good example of where you have a Sheila, and there I have legal precedent. Let's go look at the story of Sheva ben Bichri. Let's look at the story in the Gemara of Yeshua ben Levi. So let's look at the Yerushalmi. We have a Gemara a Yerushalmi that tells all the parameters. So what's the Shaila?
And Shaul.
And Shaul. Shaul commits suicide. Shaul told his weapon carrier, I want you to kill me. You do it yourself. What do you want to wipe your blood on my hands? Do it yourself. And Taki did it himself. What was even the Havamina? Why did Shaul want? Think about the guilt. Think about the burden that his weapon bearer would have to carry on his head the rest of his life, that he is the one that executed the Bechir Hashem, the first Melech in Klal Yisrael. How could Shaul do that to a person? Loisirde es achicha beferech. The Sages says, don't go and put upon a person, your brother, don't dominate over him. Don't go and torture him. What? So isn't that a violation to go put upon another person the mental trauma of living with such a thing? Living, you know, in China, they can't get people, you know, they kill people, so they say, is that they kill people there every day. They anyone who they don't like, there are no laws. I mean, there are laws, but it's not like in America. And for the smallest crime, they exist. So they have a very hard time finding executioners, people that will go and push the button, or
they have firing squads.
What?
They have firing squads.
Many people. Person.
No, but one guy doesn't have bullets in his rifle.
So no one knows who did it. So you see the good morning. How are you? So you see the psychology. You see the psychology that in the world, like you're saying, that when they have to execute, they normally do not do it by one person. Does not do it. They have multiple people. Do multiple people together, so every person in their mind does not have the burden that they're the ones who did it, because it was a group. So it could be there was someone else, and as you said, they take it even further. Some of them don't even have bullets. They don't even put real bullets in their weapons, so you could even say it wasn't, I don't even know if it was me, maybe it wasn't even me. These are all techniques to lighten the load, the burden on a person's mind of living with this horror of what you have done, even though you were required to do so. So what is Shaul putting this burden on his weapon bearer? What is Yonah doing to these people over here? If you want to do it, do it. Don't listen up. Why did you even come on the ship if you knew this would happen?
He's testing out from his Baruch. He wants to see if God really wants him dead.
Are you allowed to torture other people to test Hashem?
No, I understand. Well, that's, you know, he wants to see how far it'll go. That's why the Abarbanel says to deal with this, that they had to be sure first that he deserved to die. So lifting him up means they put him overboard, like on a rope, and they held him there and the sea calmed down. And they did it a couple of times, and they put him back up to see that rough again. And so then they realize it is you, it's nobody else. And that's why he said, now you understand it's me, lift me up again and toss me overboard.
Okay,
got that problem.
Okay, and Echanami. These are very, very difficult matters. You see, there's a question, there's a halachic issue, and we see the Chidah deals with it. And the advantage of the Chidah, he is the only one that we learned here that explains to us the significance of Ka'asher Chafatz to Asisa. This element here is what is unique to this She'elah that does not appear in any other source, any other story or precedent that we have until now. Because all of the other sugyos, the Yerushalmi, there are only three sugyos. There's a Yerushalmi, and there's the Mice and the Gemara with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and there's a story in Tanakh of Sheva ben Bichri. There are probably even more stories. All of those situations where it was a human being who made the demand, give me that person. If you don't give me that person, I'll kill you all. Here is unique. It's a unique situation. It's not a human being that's making the demand. It's Ka'asher Chofki Ato Hashem. Ka'asher Chofatzta Asisa. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself is making that demand. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam himself makes that demand, that changes the equation. It's a different type of she'ela. Or maybe not. You can say to Hashem, Torah lava shemayim hi. Hashem, just because you're the Ribbono Shel Olam, you can't break the law. You're not above the law. What?
Can he override the rules?
If he cannot, exactly. The Ribbono Shel Olam, that is an assumption that we work with all the time. It's a hashkafic principle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to follow the rules as well. It's a very fascinating idea. Hashem gave us the Torah, and Hashem also follows the rules.
How about
and
the
what? It's a very, there's no answer to that question. You're right. There is no, these are sort of questions which are age-old questions which there are no answers to. How can Hashem demand it? Even though at the end it was, no, just we're testing you, the question is too good. So let's put that aside. But here, they are playing around. The people on the ship, they're saying, we know the sugyas. We've learned the Yerushalmi. We know the Maisa with Yeshua ben Levi. We know Tanakh, Sheben Bichu. We know all the sugyas. But this She'ela is unique. Because this She'ela, it is the Ribbono Shel Olam himself who is making the demands. Question is, does that change anything? Maybe yeah. Maybe it does. Or maybe Hashem, you know, better than a human being.
Yeah, but he doesn't want it dead. He wasn't just on the ship. That's what I'm saying.
Well, al derech hateva, when you throw a person into the ocean, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, he's not going to survive.
Yeah, but he's still alive.
No, you asked this question 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
No, I respectfully disagree. When you throw a person into the ocean, that's it. Okay, that's the story. That's a miracle. That is lemala miderech hateva. Al derech hateva, they had no idea that there's going to be a fish that's going to swallow. I mean, the whole thing is so bizarre. Okay, this is not likely. What?
And the fish did swallow him.
And he survived? What kind of thing is that? A shark eats you up, you live. A shark eats you up and you're alive? The whole thing is that's not derech hateva. Here, when they're releasing him, it means we're going to kill him. Directly, be or die. So, are we buying this one? Are you any better? Just because you're making the demands, does that change the halacha? Aren't you also bound? We have to follow halacha. And if the halacha is that it's aser, just because you, Hashem, have pull, okay? You know people we don't, okay? You have connections that we don't have. So what? So what? Got to play by the rules. There's no nepotism here. There's no corruption here. We're not gonna listen to you, Hashem, because you have connections. Doesn't matter. Well, maybe it does. Maybe Hashem, you know, he has clearance, security clearance that no one else has, and you know, he gets his way. Obviously, they're grappling with all of these issues, and that's why it says these words at the end of the pasuk, Yata Hashem Kasher Chafas Tasisa. It's beautiful. It tells us why this is unique. Only the Chidah has opened up this pasuk for us in this fashion. Everyone else on the page is silent. They just say words. They just translate the words for us in a very delicate way, but they're not really coming to bring out the point of what the significance of these words are.
I'd just like to add, I think during the Holocaust, these challenges about people, with the right for a person to run away if he would endanger others, very complex, or where they wanted people, and
Yeah.
These are real challenges.
Real challenges.
It's not imagined.
Every shayla is different. You cannot extrapolate. Every shayla is unique and different. Look at the stories that are going in the Russian army. One of the worst kufas in Klal Yisrael was in Russia. Where they would draft boys into the army.
Yeah, what was that called?
The cantonists.
Yeah.
A boy that was drafted into the army, that's it. He would now, he was 30 years.
25 years.
And that was it. There was no hope for Yiddishkeit. Basically, they would it was a given that they would never be religious. They'll be finished for life.
Dead, whatever.
They'll be finished for life. That even if they would survive, they would live. They would live the 25 years. They would be completely, completely irreligious. They wouldn't necessarily even get married, have children. They were totally finished. So the question was, people had opportunities to give bribes. To give bribes or to the government officials. But you know what it meant most of the time when you give a bribe?
They'll
take someone else. So are you allowed to do that? Person has a child, a very good child, and you have the opportunity to bribe. They're going to take the neighbor. Or they'll take, if they don't take your neighbor, they'll take the neighbor down the block or on the next block or somewhere else. So you are indirectly, who's that? There can be also a fine young Ben Torah who'd one day become, has potential to have a very productive life and serve Hashem. What right do you have to go and give a bribe to the government official when he has a quota to fill and he has a certain number of boys has to be conscripted into the army? These were very, very big questions. Even to go on, what they would do, they would amputate, they would cut off their fingers.
Yes.
Or they would do crazy things that when they would go for the medical examination, they should be exempt. Who says you're allowed to do that? If you're going to do that, you're going to do something that's illegal, or something which is not proper, they're just going to take someone else. Will they not? So you're saying, so how do you deal with this? I don't know. Every situation
like
are unique, are different, and they're horrors. And here, obviously, these individuals, they're in a dilemma to which there is no solution. They have over here a person. He's volunteering to be thrown off the ship. They have to kill him, the Odayin. There are halachic issues. Maybe it's better. We should all die. That would be the noble and the proper thing to do in life, is that we should all die together with him. That's the way it should be. This world is not a perfect place. There are no solutions to certain problems, and that's what the halacha demands. We should not be the ones that will be, it should not be through our hands that another human being dies. Maybe and maybe not. How do you deal with these questions? And this, they're grappling with this. Look at all these words. There's so many words in this pasuk, and each expression is another frustration, another variable that they're grappling with. Does it conform to the template of what the halacha states you should or should you not do? The situation here is different, and we don't know how to deal with this. That is the struggle. Pasuk tes vav and tes zayin, the last two psukim of this parak, vayisu. So they lifted him. Vayisu es Yonah. Vayitiluhu el hayam. They cast him into the sea. Vayamor hayam mizapo. That's a unique word. And the yam was, it stood from mizapo. Now, that's not what they wanted. They wanted the yam to be quiet. Isn't that what we said? Wasn't that the right? It was hoylech v'soer. And he said, manase loch v'yishtoik hayom me'oleinu. Ki hayom hoylech v'soer. So it says here, what happened? Vayamod hayom mizapo. Where did we ever learn until now that there was zaf?
That's anger, right?
What anger? There was zaf. It doesn't say there was zaf. It says there was a sar. Sar is the word sar and zaf the same word? No, they're different words. They have a different connotation. We have to see what the word means. So what's going on over here? Oh, and it says vayamo. Their concern, which we have said, vayishtoik hayom. The yom was silent. That was what they asked Yonah. So the result was not what they expected. What is this? We have to see the mepharshim to see the deeper what exactly happened. Now, when this happened, what was their reaction? Pasuk tezayin vayiru hoanashim yira gidoyla es Hashem. Now there was fear. Now notice here. Notice before we go to the mepharshim, it's not this. What's the chiddush? We know they were afraid. What are you telling me now that we did not know? Well, before, well, back in Pasuk Yud, what did it say? Vayiru ho anashim yira gedoyla. The people had a yira gedoyla. Period. Here it says vayiru ho anashim yira gedoyla es Hashem. Now the yira was channeled. They feared Hashem. Until now, who were they afraid of? Of themselves. They were afraid of dying. They were afraid of their fate.
Well, they weren't sure if it was anything they did. And now they know they localized the problem.
It changed. Everything changed. When this whole story began, okay, when the storm began, what did it say?
Vayiru hamalochim. What? You see now, for sure, it's not nature taking its course. It's something that God has a hand in.
So look at the sequence.
They would see that by putting them out and seeing that the water calmed when they...
Right, that's the Medrash.
So therefore, they knew Hashem was involved.
But Yonah already told them Hashem was involved.
But this is proof to them. So
proof? Oh, you just said a very dangerous word. There is no such thing as proof in this world of God's existence.
I'm a mathematician. It's always a geometric.
There is no... And this is a hashkafa. This is a very hashkafa. If you go into the bookstore, Judaica store, you'll find a whole wall of books. Proof of God's existence.
Circumstantial.
Proof of God's existence. Mathematical formulas. Incredible stuff. A whole wall of this stuff. It's very nice. Very nice. I like these books also. But guess what? It's not true. It's just not. That's not the way I. And that's not the way we were raised. In the whole purpose of this world is that there is no proof. Emunah, by definition, means there is no proof. You cannot scientifically. This circumstantial evidence. There are coincidences that are just beyond the pale. Coincidences. I mean, again, the thing that always baffles me is that I read it. You go see if it's true, or maybe it's not true, is that Apollo, when they first landed on the moon, so they prepared everything was prepared. And they told the astronauts, they told Neil Armstrong, that there's something called dust. I forgot the exact term. There is dust in Shemayim, the same way there's dust on the earth. And after time, you know, you walk into a room you haven't walked in for years, there's a thick layer of dust. So if the world is, I don't know, how many billion years old, according to scientific dating, and we have an understanding of how much dust there should be, they made a calculation of how much dust there's going to be on the moon, and they have boots, special boots for the dust. And it was based upon the calculation that there should be, that the world is whatever billion number of years, whatever their thinking was then. Come to the moon, and there's no dust. There's a very, very teeny, teeny layer of dust. And according to their own calculations, the amount of dust accounts for 6,000 years. According to their own calculations that they made in advance, they were preparing for a certain number of inches of dust. They were preparing for a certain number of inches. And they had the boots were made to handle a certain number of inches of dust if based upon the fact the world is a certain number of billion years old. And there's only that. And according to their own mathematical calculations, the world is only 6,000 years old. So how do you explain that? They don't. So that was right away forgotten. That was right. That data disappeared off the face of the earth very quickly. Now, listen, maybe it means nothing. It doesn't mean anything because, you know, I'm just saying is you can have proof, the same way they can, this. It doesn't mean anything. The bottom line is everything you can twist and turn, you can explain this way, that way, all the coincidences. The bottom line is emuna. So here you just said they put him in, the water stopped. They took him out, it started again. It doesn't mean anything.
So they realized that there was something else, and he said it was Hashem. So therefore they said, if Hashem wants to save him, we can throw him in the water, and if Hashem wants to save him, he can save him. If he doesn't want to save him, he won't save him.
Right. They grew spiritually. Look at the sequence of events. When it first started in Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayiru Hamalochim. It says here the only ones that were afraid were the sailors, the captains, whatever this word means, the people who were in charge of rowing the ship, the crew. But then it says, Vayizaku ish el Elohov. What does that mean? Why doesn't it say that the Malachim cried out to God? Why doesn't it say Vayiru ho'anoshim like it says later in the parak? It's not so clear. In the beginning of the parak, the people that were afraid.
Didn't we say that there were no other people except for Yonah?
So why then over here are they
called Yonah and the sailors?
But why over here is that not necessarily? It says there were 70 people, 70 nationalities. The Chazal, there were 70 nationalities on board. It says Yonah was in a rush, so he paid for the journey. Does it mean that no one else, there were no other passengers? It just means that had they waited, they would have filled up the ship with 500 people. Now we only had 10 people, or 50 people, 70 people, plus the crew, whatever it was. The impression is that there were a few people. We don't know. It's not clear. But there's a possibility that there were passengers on the ship. Because over here, and we have to understand that there are contradictions. Not contradictions, but different expressions. Here it says, in the very beginning of the first time when they detected that there is a problem, the word is vayiru'u. There are three expressions of fear in this parak. First, vayiru'u hamalochim. The sailors were terrified. Only the sailors, the crew, they sense that there's a problem. But then it says, Vayizaku ish el Elohov. Who is the ish? Does that refer only back to the Malachim and not the passengers? I don't know. But obviously,
each one of
the Malachim.
Each individual.
Each
person that was on the ship. They were all,
But they were all afraid?
Yes.
No, it doesn't say that. It says, Vayiru hamalochim. The only ones that were afraid were the crew.
Okay, well, they knew what was.
So the crew made an announcement over the PA system. We have trouble. We have trouble. Everyone pray. Everyone pray. So everyone started to pray. But they didn't pray with intensity. They just pray, lip service. Like basically, Rabbi Isai, it's now time, daven mincha. Okay, everyone go to the back of the plane. When you daven mincha, just keep in mind, we have some turbulence, everything should be okay. The crew, sitting in the front, realized, we got a problem here. And they didn't tell the full scope of the problem to the passengers, but they told them, maybe you should daven mincha. Maybe a good idea, you should have a mincha with kavanah. We're not going to give you a hard time. Everyone should go. We'll tell the stewardess to come to the front, let you have, do whatever you want back there. We're not going to give you a hard time. Because they realize we got a problem. We need a zuchus. It's a strange expression here. Then, when the ship got really bad, and the storm was intense, and they cast the lots, it says something much more intense. It says when he pasuk yud the second vayiru ho'anoshim. It doesn't say any more the malachim, and it doesn't just say they were afraid. It says a yira gidoyla, an intense fear. And now we come to the end.
See, what I don't like is darshing every single word because it's not from Isha Chumshei Torah.
Why not?
I don't know, it's not the same. I don't look at it that way. God gave them license to use language.
The Neviim?
Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't give Moshe license to use language until the Torah.
Okay, I agree, it's not the same intensity, but here there are three levels.
They repeat some words. That's
here, the end, in Pasuk Tezayin, it says, Vayiru hu anoshim yiro gidoyla. But we're not finished yet. Now it says Es Hashem. Yira Shamayim is a process. You don't wake up, you don't become into this world with the ultimate Yira Shamayim. Look, we say on Rosh Chodesh, there are three levels of Yira Shamayim in the Bracha, in the Birchas Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
We first start off with Yiras Shamayim, Yiras Chet, and then again, Yiras Shamayim. Okay, what's the nusach? Let's take a sitter just to go over the exact nusach. And I want to suggest that these three levels correspond to those three. Shabbos Mevorach, Shachris Lechol. There we go. Musaf. Okay, on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Yiratzal Bulchanecha. Why the repetition? Hashem Elokeinu Levav Seinu Shetachar Shalai Zechodesh Zeh L'Tavu L'Vrocha V'Sin Lanu Chayim Aruchim Chayim Shal Shalom Chayim Shal Teva Chayim Shal Vrocha Chayim Shal Parnas Chayim Shal Chatzos Chayim Sheyesh Bohem Yiras Shamayim V'Yiras Chet 32 Then Chaim Shema Mushachlim Chaim Shul Oishu V'Chover Chaim Shetevanu Ahavas Torah V'Yiras Shamayim. What is going on? Repetition. If you, we were to write this, get an F. Okay, you go to Yeshiva Katana. You write such a nusach.
Well, that's why they write
F.
A lot of different Torah on that. After Oshiva
Kavod, you lose your Shema. That's a joke. So obviously, there are different levels of Yira. There's Yira Shemayim, Yira Schet, and then there's a Yira Shemayim that is associated with Ahavas Torah. There are different levels of Yira Shemayim. Look at what's going on here with these people on the ship. It says here in this one parak, they experienced three different states of yira. Vayiru hamalochim vayizaku ish el Elohav. There was fear. A person recognized, you know, there's something wrong in life. There's something going on over here. And then vayiru hoanoshim yira gedoyla. And then came to the madrega vayiru hoanoshim yira gedoyla es Hashem. The first time, now we also ish el elokav, okay? Kediri was the people who were over the avodah zara, but a person in life, you get shaken up, you're afraid, you daven, and then what happened? It's very, very mamash, fits in very well here. What happened? They took gorolos, and who did the girl fall upon? Yonah. Yonah is the choite. Now we know it's not abstract. Until now, the Yira was an abstract Yira. The boat is in a very dangerous matzav. We're in danger. Now the boat. Now we need to make a cheshbon hanefesh. And guess what? We have identified the disease.
Circumstantial.
We have identified it's Yonah. Now we're Yore the Chet. First, it was just a general Yira Shemayim. Now it's Yiras Chet, higher Madrega. We have to eradicate the Chet. We eradicated the Chet, and what is the result? They got rid of Yonah, and now we come to a very high level. Chayim, Shedehevanu, Ahavas Torah, the Yiras Shamay. Which the Mepharshim explained that this is the Yiras Haroimimus. Okay? There's a fear, there's awe, there's fear of being punished. I'm not going to be punished. I'm in awe. Yiras Haroimimus. After they live through this experience of seeing the Yad Hashem, it's a whole new Yira. Vayiru hoanoshim Yira gedoylo es Hashem. They were in awe of Hashem. And as the pasuk goes on to say, what did they do in reaction? Vayizbuchu zevach la Hashem. They offered sacrifices, vayidru nidorim, and they made vows to serve Hashem. Yiras haroimimus. What? They were megayir, right, of all these things. This is a perfect parallel to the nusach of the birchas Rosh Chodesh. They start off abstract fear. Something in life is not correct. You then make a cheshbon hanefesh, and you identify your shortcomings. Yonah is the source of our trouble. Yonah has rebelled. Yonah is involved in something that's not kosher. And now we realize, we learned the inyan, we realize the chomer hadavar, it's now yiras chet. It's very specific what it is. And then we take care of it. We deal responsibly with our averos. And this process of going from abstract to being specific and being responsible to deal with the issues. What is the result? The result is Yiras Haroimimus. A beautiful expression of Yira, which is a healthy Yira, which is part of Ahavas Torah, which leads what they became, Vayizbuchu Zevach LaHashem Vayidru Nidarim. Okay, so we are showing here, this perek is something that is very practical. We say this on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Every Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, we bring out this idea. Okay, now that's the pasuk. Let's take a look at the mitzvah stuff and see some of the other interesting ideas. Let's look where we have time. We have pasuk tezvav in the mitzudos David. Okay, pasuk vayamoid shosak. So here he fudges it. Okay, I'm not happy with this. I want to come back to this and dwell upon the fact that the pasuk over here says vayamoid hayom mizapo. It was, we'll talk about this tomorrow, but it was the unexpected. You in life, we always think that when we get what we want, we have a need, then the situation will, the results will be the way we expect. And almost all the time, it's not like that. You want something, because if only I had this thing, then everything in life will change. And then we finally get it, and the results are totally not what we expect. Sometimes better, sometimes worse. It's not what we expected. Here's the same thing. They just wanted the yam to be quiet. Doesn't say those words here. The Mitzudos David, for the sake of simplicity, says you don't have to be so precise. It's what it means. It means shosak, like we said, vayishle kayivenoch miketzef har oshas galah, from the anger, from the turbulence of the waves, the violent waves. Pasuk to Zayin on page 421, vayiru. That's really what we said. It's Yiras Haroinimus. They're not afraid for their lives anymore. They're in a state of awe called Yiras Haroinimus. Ve'yizbuchu Ritzon Eloimar Kiblu L'atzmam L'zboich L'Hashem B'veis HaMikdash. Now why did he say that? He learns over here that the Nedarim Ve'yizbuchu Zivu L'Hashem, where can a goy bring this? The Mitzudos David is getting into a halachic discussion. Can a goy offer a sacrifice to Hashem outside of the Beis HaMikdash? Today, is there such a thing? They're not coming to ask us, right? They're not coming to ask us. But can a goy come and offer a sacrifice, and why not? Why not? We know that a goy ki beisi beis tefila l'chol ha'amim, that if a goy comes to Beis HaMikdash and he wants to become a covenant, we accept it. We accept only carbon oilos. And there's a whole set of rules. There's a whole she'ela, who pays for the salt? You know, there are certain things that have to be, you know, when you bring a carbon, the guy, how much does the carbon cost? Well, the animal cost $100. But you know, you have to also add salt. And the salt costs $5. Do we put on the bill, it's $100 for the animal and $5 for the salt? And taxes, all whatever you want to say, all these things. So the Gemara has a discussion. The Gemara says, better not. Don't do it. Just charge him for the basic animal. Don't go and play games with him. But a Jew comes, of course. There's a cost for the salt, and you have to tip the kohanim, and you got to pay for this, and you know, electricity and this, and maybe you'll be a donor, you'll be a sponsor for our next event. You know, you hold the guy up. The guy is not getting out of there until you squeeze him out. Okay, a Jew you can squeeze out, but don't. What?
The question is when they were Megayer.
It doesn't say here they were Megayer. Megayer doesn't say those words here. No, it doesn't say Megayer, because they're Megayer, of course. So this that we have halach in Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam and all the halachs that a goy can bring a carbon in the Beis Hamikdash, a carbon oila. Doesn't mean that they're not allowed to bring outside the Beis HaMikdash. Not necessarily. But so why then? So if that indeed is, so why then does the Mitzudos David have to say over here, Vayizchu Zevach LaHashem in the Beis HaMikdash? Not necessarily. You can bring but you can also bring outside the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not so clear. He makes that point after that's a big topic. How does he know it? Maybe the word zevach. It could be the word zevach is a very unique word which connotes only inside the Beis HaMikdash. Not necessarily, actually, not like that. But that's what it says over here. Why does he have to say that? A neder, you can bring carbon oil. You can bring a carbon oil as a neder. So why then does he say Vayidu Nidorim to give money to poor people? I don't know, but that's what the Mitzudos David says. Okay, let's meet this little Rashi, Pasuk, the only one Rashi here. Vayidu Nidorim Sheyiskayru. So here Rashi says the Medrash, not Pshat. The Mitzudos does not say this. This is only a Medrash that Rashi dwelt upon. they became a neder means geirus. Where do you get that from? Where do you get the word a neder connotes geirus? It's hard enough what Mitzudos David said, that a neder means a pledge of tzedakah, where biblically the word in the Torah for neder does nothing to do with tzedakah, has to do with karbanos. Yaakov Avinu said, "Vayidor Yaakov neder leimar im yelo kimi madi v'shmaran b'chol asher teilech." And what does he go on to say? Even lechol vegel l'boish v'ha'even hazois shalom l'beis al-babi. All of the conditions, all of the conditions. Of then what's going to be the then my neder? V'ha'even hazois. Asher samti matseva ye beis elokim v'chol asher titen li aser asrenu loch. And what does it mean aser as? Does that mean tzedakah? Not necessarily. Does it mean I'm going to go give 10%? It means I'm going to give my korbanos. V'ha'even hazois asher samti matseva ye beis elokim. This will be the beis hamigdash. So okay, we have to define the word neder. Mitzudos David jumps and he says, in this context, neder means tzedakah. Rashi quotes a medrash that says it means geirus. How does he know that? So he quotes, so we have a long sifsei zekelim, which the Mishnah will have to look at tomorrow, along with some other very fascinating mefarshim. Let's stop here. All we do today, we're going to do a little bit of sefer chassid. But I want to spend most of the time. I printed out copies of the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, the story of Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. I want to learn the Gemara inside and discuss some ideas in the Gemara inside. But we'll just for a few minutes, we'll learn very quickly some Sefer Chassidim.